This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Big Time Rush. Performing live in concert. Playing every song from every episode and more. Big Time Rush. With special guests Caitlin Tarver and Stephen Kramer Glickman. Get tickets now at LiveNation.com.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric, with our biggest sale ever. Furnaces from $39 a month. Furnace and air conditioning combos from $59 a month. Plus 72 months interest-free financing and up to a $4,000 system rebate. Four Seasons guaranteed to beat any competitor's price by up to $1,000 guaranteed. So call today for your free in-home estimate and same-day installation.
For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
Chicago winters can be tough. Snow, ice, and freezing temps make every drive a challenge. If you're thinking it's time for a new Chevy, you're right. Your local Chevy dealer has the perfect vehicle to keep you safe and confident on the road. From heavy-duty performance to everyday versatility, Chevy has you covered. The Silverado offers unmatched power. The Equinox and Blazer provide all-weather confidence. Need room for the whole crew? Check out the Traverse, Tahoe, or Suburban, or go for the sporty, city-friendly tracks, perfect for navigating winter streets. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. That's ChevyDriveChicago.com to explore the latest models, find special offers, locate your nearest dealer, and even start shopping online. Don't let winter slow you down. Find your next Chevy today at ChevyDriveChicago.com. That's ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Touchdown! I don't believe it!
You're listening to the best of the Browns.
Ball game over! Browns win! Browns win!
A weekly mix of 92.3 The Fan's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
So everybody was wondering if anything was going to change the first opportunity Andrew Berry got to talk at the Combine. The rest of the league is there. All the other teams are there. A chance to wheel and deal, a chance to talk to other GMs, their ownership groups involved on a big ticket item like Myles Garrett. And yesterday was the same. In fact, could you make the argument that Andrew Berry was doubling, if not tripling down, when he expressed once again that Myles Garrett is not going anywhere? Not only that, and I'm joined by Matt Derry, who is in for Ken Carman today. Matt, the way that he keeps saying that we can't even envision a world where Myles Garrett isn't a part of this operation, you wonder how that is going to reverberate back to Myles Garrett.
Let me ask you a question, Anthony. Right, like, what's the goal of every NFL team right now? What are they trying to do?
Trying to set themselves up to win a lot of football games in the Super Bowl.
Build their team, right? Add or subtract. Put a roster together to win. The Browns have one goal right now. The Browns' goal is to make their best player not want to leave. This entire offseason is being built upon, what does Miles think? Is Miles going to like that? So, like, the talk of, hey, we're in the Stafford sweepstakes. If you're Myles Garrett, you're like, all right, a real quarterback? I'm down. All right, sounds good. Then it's, hey, Shedeur Sanders is a possibility. We talked to him at the Shrine Bowl. We're talking to him in Indy. All right, I'm down for that. Shador's kind of cool, and he's a good quarterback. I wouldn't mind that. Everything is, the entire offseason is built upon trying to keep your player here. It's pathetic. And, like, they only have to blame themselves for this. And I watched the Andrew Berry presser yesterday in preparation for this today, doing the show with you. And it's like, I felt sorry for him. And the media did the best they could. Like, everybody tried, you know, Zach Jackson, all these, they're all trying to ask the questions. He can't He can't answer. I'm like, the other GMs talking about it give you a window into this. For example, Detroit, people are talking about the Lions adding Garrett and putting Garrett on the other side of Aiden Hutchinson and going, but even Brad Holmes, their GM, came out and said, yeah, I don't see a scenario where it's probably not happening because they got to pay Hutchinson soon, probably in upwards of $30 million. And you know, that's what Garrett's going to want. So even the Lions, who are rumored to be one of the teams interested, they're bowing out. So there's just so much in play here. But the bottom line is I kind of felt sorry for Andrew Berry yesterday. And I know he's a part of the problem. But like, I kind of watched him yesterday going, oh my gosh, like, stop asking these
questions. Well, the crazy part is, almost 9 times out of 10, any GMs, I used the term embattled earlier to describe him. That's never
good. I think
that
was perfect.
You never want to be embattled. What, like, if I go, we go to the embattled Matt Derry.
Right, that's right.
Just not what anybody would want to hear about their current job status.
No, of course not.
So
do you agree with me,
yes,
though, that's... Every answer, every move is almost like, what will Miles think of this? Like, I'm dead serious. Like, I know you and Daryl were talking about the Stafford stuff yesterday, and we'll get to that. But, like, that would be appealing to Garrett, wouldn't it?
I do think Stafford would be.
Of course.
And we'll get into Matt Stafford coming up in about 15 minutes, because I think you have unique insight to him as a football player, what he might be looking for, him and his wife and children might be looking for.
Let's not get her
Well,
started.
That's come up. I mean, that has absolutely come up. But we'll get to that. But what I was going to say is, 9 times out of 10, when a GM is coming off a 3-win team, when you're looking at the depletion of talent, like, they were in this Super Bowl window and then they win 3 games. I've used the term before, but they're not only bad, but they're old and expensive. That's the perfect storm for a GM that is what? Out of a job. So it's very rare that you even have a GM that gets to speak in this situation. You know, you saw yesterday in Jacksonville, did you see their GM? He looked like he was 28 years old.
He looked like he was 12.
And he's up there, but the reason he's up there is because they got to the point of no return. They had to move on, and they did, and they hired this whiz kid, apparently. Okay, we'll see how that works out. But you look around the NFL, and in situations like these, you've got a new GM. Look at the Tennessee Titans situation and who's running them right now.
Yeah, the Jets. Oh, there's a ton of
the Jets, yes. But Andrew Berry is still here. You've had this weird stability for a team that is coming off a horrendous year. They were arguably the worst team in football last year, and they were in the Super Bowl contention window. I want you to listen to this. Albert Breer comes on weekly, was in Indy yesterday, and did a terrific job with the boys, with Jonathan Peterlin and Nick Wilson. Here, what maybe this will throw some water on a lot of this chaotic situation that people like me like to present. Listen to Albert Breer on the Browns situation.
Well, I don't think he intends to trade him at all. I don't think that's part of their plan. I don't think they're going to hang up on every team that calls them, you know? And so I think this is sort of evolving. And I think part of it, guys, quite honestly, is putting a quarterback plan in front of Myles Garrett and having that plan play out and showing him that they can get in a position to compete while he's still at the top of his game. And I really think that's the way you got to look at this. And I know we've talked about this a lot. Can you get good enough, fast enough at the quarterback position to really contend for a championship? I do think that Miles is being forthright when he says the priority for him is to be in a position to compete for a championship.
Now, I know for a fact, Albert does talk to the Browns,
sure,
and he's using source material there. And if you listen to Albert, he's very even keel on this situation. He's not like me, where the moment I heard the trade demand, I'm like, well, that's it. It's been real. It's been fun watching Myles Garrett.
It's over.
Well, the Browns are not operating like that. And I want to know to you and the fans, 216-474-0092, is Andrew Berry delusional when you hear him yesterday? Or is he operating in a world where not only are they keeping Myles Garrett, but they are also going to strike rich at quarterback, and they are going to be in position to get back into the Super Bowl window as early as this upcoming football season. What say you, Matt?
Well, it has to happen. And the other thing that, I mean, you know, it's weird about the Browns. Like, all of these teams that suck, like, the Jets have been bad forever. The Titans draft at the top of the draft every year. Like, there's just some bad franchises, a lot of bad franchises. The Raiders, come on, they're a joke. Now, The Pete Carroll hire is intriguing, but regardless, another team that's always drafting in the top five. The Browns have been one of these teams that, like, yes, when they're bad, they're really bad. And obviously we know about the Super Bowl history and there's none and everything else. But, like, there have been good teams. Baker Mayfield won a playoff game in Pittsburgh a few years ago. They were in the playoffs in Houston 2 years ago. So it's not like Miles hasn't been on some good teams. And this notion of, oh, we got to rebuild and Betonio and JOK. Yeah, there's going to be some defections and guys that leave and guys that retire and everything else. But you can win in this league rather quickly. C.J. Stroud is the one guy 2 years ago. Last year was Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, both coming from bad organizations,
teams,
right? Bad
horrible
teams.
So, like, especially the Commanders, please.
Ownership, like, questions, yeah.
Right. So, like, do the Browns feel like we're going to be the Stroud Texans, the Daniels Commanders? That's going to be us this year, where we draft either Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, whoever is there at two, if that's the plan, and we can win right away. And watch this, Miles. We've got some cap space, and we're this and we're that. He wants to see it. But I give, I felt a little sorry for Andrew Berry yesterday watching that, I like that he's dug in, because he's saying he's our best player. We don't want to trade him. And he's under contract with us. So I kind of liked that, if that's kind of in a sick way.
All right. Jim in Medina starts us off. You're on Sports Radio, 92.3 The Fan. How are you, Jim?
Good, Anthony. Hey, Matt. How you been?
Hey, James. Great to hear from you, brother.
Yeah, thanks, man. I think we should trade him. I'd rather get, like, a couple first-round draft picks if he's not happy. And I know he's a great player, but he last year against Houston, he had a pretty bad game in the playoff game, which I predicted, by the way. But anyways, that's my feeling.
All right, Jim, thank you very much. I think the fans are a really tough spot right now, Matt, because they're not burning jerseys yet.
No.
You know, nobody's doing that for the viral clout. I think everybody is holding on for dear life, that somehow, some way, at the very least, you get another year out of them. That's kind of what popped into my head when I was thinking about all the Stafford rumors, and we're going to get to those coming up in 8 minutes. But I keep thinking, can they salvage this and at least keep Miles for one more year, and then you can maybe piecemeal it 1 year by 1 year? That's a tough spot to be in.
It is. And, like, you and Ken mentioned it during Super Bowl week, when I thought Miles went a little bit too far on Radio Row and it kind of got annoying. I think now that that's over with, the fans are still on his side. You know, I mean, Jim brought up a point about draft picks. Yeah, that'd be great. But again, you're asking a guy to draft and win the draft, and that hasn't won the draft much recently. And I know he hasn't had a lot of first-round picks because of the Watson trade, but, like, even the seconds and the thirds, I mean, JOK was a good one, but there haven't been a lot of great ones there. So, I don't know. If they can salvage this, if they can keep him, that's what you want. But again, you're right. How ugly is this going to get? Right now it's not, because it's only February.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW, because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour, the boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Audio courtesy of Cleveland.com. It started with a trade request. It has moved to declining extension talks. The only thing next would be an ultimatum. Anthony Lima and Tom Withers in for Ken Carman, a real journalist. Last week we were supposed to have, well, a quasi-journalist in Jason Lloyd. We get a real journalist today in Tom Withers of Associated Press fame. You've seen him around town for the better part of, can I say 25 years? How long?
You can say 26 years.
26, I was close.
There you go.
I was close. Your biographers gave me some semi-accurate information. Tom, your first thoughts when we knew the Miles stuff wasn't great. There were some rumblings that maybe it's about the money, maybe a guaranteed contract, maybe make him the most expensive non-quarterback in the NFL and guarantee most of it. Maybe that'll do the trick. Maybe there's a means to the end for Myles Garrett. And yesterday, according to the reports, that got squashed in a big way.
Well, now we're at the tried and true negotiating in the media phase of this fight, right? And I don't know what the end game is here for either party. It's been real puzzling to me, Anthony, to see the way that Miles is kind of, you know, flip-flopped here over the last couple of months, right? He goes from, I'd like to retire as Brown. I love it in Cleveland. The fans love me, et cetera. I think we can turn this around.
They're not that far away.
Not that far away. The Hard Knocks interview, followed by the ultimatum, and now this negotiating and this leverage play that he's trying to make as what looks to be like an NBA-type play. You know, towards the end of the season, I'll be honest with you, when I heard that he had been consulting with LeBron, I thought, uh-oh, here it comes. And then sure enough, you know, a couple weeks later, we find out that he's made these kind of demands.
Yeah, not only that. The LeBron stuff scared a lot of people because the minute that and now he did say that he had made up his mind before talking to LeBron. People aren't going to believe that. I mean, people are going to think that, like, LeBron was in there planting the seed. No, what planted the seed was 3-14 in the middle or getting close to who knows where he is in his prime. It seems like he hit the way his body is. He should age gracefully in this game and be able to play a long time. But with that said, I mean, 8 years. 8 years you devote to an organization. I always ask fans, like, how many years do you think you deserve or are you owed when you draft a player? Because LeBron, I think, taught us years ago that, you know, 7 years, highs and lows, that's a good amount of time. We always wanted more with LeBron. But I think since then, the way that the leagues have evolved in free agency and how a lot of players in different sports have steered their way to different organizations.
Power.
Yeah. Feels like 8 years is at some point the team also needs to prove themselves to the player.
I'll give you that. I think the Browns have treated him well, though, yeah. Also, right? I mean, and he has played at an unbelievable level the last 4 years. I think there's been some inconsistencies, early on where we wanted, hey, where's that Miles game-ending sack, right? Where is that moment where he actually steps up and becomes that kind of guy? We've seen that the last 2 or 3 years. I'll remind you, we also had that car accident a couple years ago, bit of a self-inflicted wound.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will say that the Browns stood by him during the Mason Rudolph situation and the suspension, right? That's not to say that he hasn't been a good soldier. We've also heard whispers out of Berea that he may not be the leader that, you know, he espouses to be, right? He may not be exactly that guy. I've been told by some players in that locker room that there's times when Myles Garrett brings up his voice in the locker room and nobody really pays too much attention to it because he's kind of playing his own little game as well. He's a bit of a diva. Don't get me wrong. I like Myles a lot. I have a lot of respect for Myles as a person, as a player. I think he's done some great things for this community. But I think this power play, especially now in the media, here we are, unnamed anonymous sources, which I have a hard time with. If you're going to give me that story, how come you can't put your name on it? So we're going to have this back and forth.
And that's coming from you, well, who's used unnamed sources over the course of your career at times for background.
And you have to at times because you're forced into a situation where you need to get the news. But you also say to that source, why can't I put your name on it? And if you can't put your name on it, you better give me a good reason why. Otherwise, this is not going to go on the wire because we're not going to play this back and forth game doing your negotiating for your client, for your whoever. So it's in a bad situation now. I'm not surprised that the Browns are digging in their heels. They have no other choice at this point, right? They got to figure out a way. I thought it was interesting this week the way Andrew Berry framed it as, I'm not interested in moving Myles Garrett, digging in, right? Somebody's going to have to make him interested. If this trade is going to happen, right? And somebody's going to have to put down some kind of a package in front of the Browns that they just can't refuse.
Well, not only that, Tom Withers in for Ken Carmen this morning. We got a loaded show for you. We've got plenty of football from the Combine. We've got Carl Dukes of the Infinity Sports Network at 8:20. Howard Beck of the Ringer at 9 o'clock. Four Cavaliers in the top 50 of their updated rankings, even though we found some more skepticism out there in radio land. We'll play some of that for you coming up. But Tom, you know, it was a few years ago. Was it 3 years ago that Jadeveon Clowney, when he walked out the door, started, you know, lobbing some things, I would say, for Myles Garrett, considering how beloved he was in this town, unsavory things.
Casting aspersions.
Yeah, and we all took Myles' side. We're like, oh, Jadeveon Clowney is on a different team every year, rent a player. I have seen some people wonder, oh, was there something to that at this time? None of this. What I'm not going to do is just kick Myles out the door like he's garbage, like, oh, we're going to be better without him. We know that's not the case. I wonder, the Canton thing, it was weird to me, the terminology that bothered him so much. I thought that was... I thought that was fine. I didn't think that was that big of a deal. I understood what Berry was saying. But then Berry, the last time he talked on Monday, you know, that press conference, about 15 minutes at the Combine in Indy, you know, he said something again that I think might have rattled the camp of Myles a little bit, which was, you know, there's not a scenario. I can't envision a scenario where he is not a Cleveland Brown. Well, you have somebody who's saying, not only do you need to envision that scenario, you need to make it happen. And I wonder what that was going to be met with. And I think we found out because it was just a day later, basically, that Myles is like, this is not about the money.
Yeah, he's swinging back.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Much like Super Bowl week when he went on, you know, Radio Row and did all those interviews, and much like this week where the NFL is all converged on Indianapolis, that's a platform, right, to get out however it is you feel about whatever subject it may be. So I don't know. I think things will calm down here over the next couple of weeks. I think this was a card that was necessary, to your point, Anthony, a card that the Garrett camp felt they needed to play to counter whatever Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski had thrown out from their side over the last couple of weeks. I still think, in my heart of hearts, I still think there's a way that they get this resolved, believe it or not. I still think there's...
Resolved?
I do. I think there's a situation in which the Browns make an offseason move or two that placate Garrett and make him happy enough to stay here. I think he genuinely does love it here. I think he wants to finish his career in Cleveland. I think that's a big part of what he wants to be in terms of his legacy. And I think if the Browns convince Myles that, okay, you know, we've made a trade for, let's say, this free agent or this veteran quarterback, okay, he's going to be our bridge quarterback for 2 years. We're going to take either Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders at number two. Here's the rest of our plans. I'm not so sure that the Browns laid out definitively step A, B, C, D, and E to Myles earlier in the offseason as to here's what we're going to do, because I'm not sure they knew what they were going to do.
I don't even know how you could.
How could you? Right. That. You haven't even You haven't had the combine. You haven't sat down with Sanders. You haven't sat down with Ward. You haven't taken a look at the landscape to see who's going to be available and who's not. So I still think deep down that there's still a way that this can get fixed.
Owen, we found some optimism. Finally found somebody in Cleveland who's optimistic about the grizzled veteran reporter is the guy that's optimistic. The stereotypes are all wrong. This is incredible.
That's what it took, huh? Yeah. Again, as I said before, I've got a great deal of respect for Miles. I kind of see where he's coming from. I also think that because he lived through the Joe Thomas final years and saw what that looked like for a Hall of Fame player, that maybe gave him a snapshot of what his future could look like if he decided, you know, to stand pat and not do things. Hey, bottom line, 3-14 and not having a quarterback is why we're here. Bottom line.
All right, 216-474-0092. You've heard me. You've heard Tom Withers. I like a fresh dose of optimism because this has been an ugly week. It's been an ugly month for the Browns. When you think about from the Miles situation to, oh, by the way, Nick Chubb's going to be a free agent and the way that they're talking. Boy, I couldn't believe it. I thought at the very least that they'd be able to strike up something where he's not the guy in the running back room with the understanding, let's see what you got. No, they're basically like, no, he's going to pursue free agency. And boy, people around the league don't seem to think that he's coming back to the Browns. It's still early in the process. We'll see how healthy Nick Chubb is, whether he's even on a football team to start the year. You know, but that was just another blow. The JOK news. The JOK news, I mean, you can make an argument that's as big as anything, because if they don't have JOK, then Jim Schwartz doesn't have his defense. I mean, he is a linchpin in that defense.
I thought last year, I'll be honest with you, I thought last year he was playing better than anybody on the Browns before he got hurt. He was absolutely their top defensive player ahead of Myles Garrett at the time of the injury. And now we don't know if his career's over or not.
Yeah, so it's been, you know, kind of this drip of, all right, wake us up when we have the draft. And now the draft, you've gotten a lot of wrenches thrown into that. Abdul Carter, the injury situation. People seem, you guys tell me if I'm wrong on this. It seems like Shador, his stock has gone down once everybody convened in Indy. Because you kept hearing in the lead up, well, he doesn't have the physical traits, but he can do this, this, and this, you know, adequately well. And it just feels like, even though he's not throwing, everybody kind of got together in Indy and has a similar story. Like, hey, he's you know, an accurate passer from the pocket, but after that, here's where it goes wrong. Then, all right, Cam Ward. Can I get Cam Ward? And is that going to make sense if Abdul Carter is the guy that goes number one in Tennessee, or is Tennessee going to trade out? So there's a lot of mystery in the air. Browns are sitting at number two, which I do think is a fortuitous spot to be in, despite all of the noise around this. What is your sense right now, Tom? Because you said you think there is a way that if everything went a certain way, that maybe Miles would be intrigued.
Yeah, and I don't want to throw another cold bucket of water at things, but and this one is close to the heart, is Joel Bitonio's situation, right? We're, you know, borderline Hall of Fame offensive guard who may not be coming back. So, yeah, this happens frequently, Anthony. These combines, this is what happens, right? The league gathers. Suddenly they start dissecting players. Everybody's trying to figure out, like you said, you know, the deep mysteries and depths of this draft. This is a fascinating draft, I think, just because you have so many teams towards the top, as you always do, that are in dire need of a quarterback, the Browns being at the top of that list, right? You have a player in Abdul Carter who people are starting to talk about as a generational type of edge rusher, much in the Myles Garrett, you know, realm. So, yeah, there's a lot that goes on here. And I'm with you. I think it's gone from, okay, all these connections, you know, whether it's, Shador playing Madden with the Browns or whatever the case may be. There were all these connections going in. And now it feels like it's flipped to the other side and it's suddenly like Cam Ward seems to be the guy. So I think there's still a lot that can happen here. I think, you know, we can get into this, but, you know, in my mind, the Browns have to take a quarterback in number two. I don't think there's any way around it. I think they have to fall in love with one of those two guys. It's rare you're in the situation they've spent the last 75 years looking for a franchise quarterback. When you have the opportunity to get one of the top two with the number two pick, I think you've got to do it.
I've been with you all along. I think I've been thinking, assuming that Cam Ward was not going to be there at one, so I assumed it would be Shador Sanders. I guess there's a lot of silliness going on, so we don't really know what to make of any of this. I still see there are plenty of guys that do have, you know, first-round grades for both Shador and Cam Ward. Now, we can debate, well, where in the first round? But does it matter when you don't have a quarterback? Does it matter? Are you going to try to thread the needle and trade down and still get the quarterback that you like? You know, we have Brian Hoyer on a couple of times. We're going to have him on, you know, every week in the lead up to the draft on Tuesdays. And Hoyer, He doesn't want either of these guys. And he's fine with the Browns taking a quarterback with that very coveted first pick of the second round. But that's tough again. What if your guy's not around? We're just punting on the decision for a year? So there's a lot that goes into it.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almased. Almased is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almased. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. We are excited, as always, to have my partner who's on It's Always Game Day in Cleveland hanging out. And, of course, you know him and love him because his name is Daryl Ryder.
Do we love him?
Yeah, we do. We love him.
I've always loved him. He's brought to us by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store.
Hi, Daryl. How are you?
Hello, boys.
You good?
D?
I'm always good.
Rumors about media people fighting in Indianapolis. Daryl, have you ever had a good knockdown drag out with another media member in Northeast Ohio? And if so, did you land the punch?
I have never thrown a punch, but yes, I've had my fair share of shouting matches with media members before. But you know what?
Yes.
Caffeine and alcohol, quite the lubricant combination in Indianapolis.
Oh, well, that'll do it. Mm. Yeah, you never know.
You'll have that.
Little clue in. You'll have that. What are you trying to say?
I'm not trying to say anything.
I'm just making sure. I don't know. I'm trying to talk to people like you and Jeff that might actually get in an argument with another media member because my temperament would never let that happen to me.
Oh, no. Heavens, no.
That has never happened to me.
Usually my arguments stem from people getting in my way when I've already established my spot.
Yes, there you have it.
But it has happened, yes. I confess.
Oh, I've seen some good videographer shakedowns, some elbows in the scrum.
Oh, back in the day, there were actual fisticuffs thrown way back in the day.
Also, not a good idea to be called a microphone holder. I'll just leave it at that.
And yeah, there's that too.
Yeah, you don't want to be called that. That's an insult. Nope. Jeff, do you have any questions for my friend that I spent the last hour with last night? And I would highly advise you to listen to the It's Always Game Day in Cleveland podcast, available on the Odyssey app and on YouTube.
Are you kidding? I could talk to Daryl all day.
Oh, well, knock it out, my friend.
All right, Daryl, I'm going to talk to you all day. Five of the top seven teams in this draft need a quarterback. Does that make the Browns situation more advantageous for a trade or more advantageous to take possibly the second best quarterback in the draft? What do you like?
For me personally, I think trade, but as far as what I think the Browns should do versus what I think they're actually going to do, like polar opposites. So I kind of feel like they will take a quarterback at two. And now part of this could be a big smokescreen operation, but just listening to Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski in Indianapolis this week and their thoughts on this particular quarterback class, especially Stefanski, talking about yesterday how this class is pretty well maligned in the national media, and he doesn't agree with that evaluation or viewpoint of this class not being very good. He feels that it is a better class than the media is giving credit for. And again, could be all part of the smokescreen process to entice someone to come up to two and give up more than they should for the Browns to slide back a few spots. But, you know, let's be honest about it. The reason the attention's being paid to Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward is because the most coveted, valued, and important position is quarterback.
Daryl, what do you think about the news about Abdul Carter? I know we didn't get a chance to talk about this. Or maybe we did for a second. But just the foot injury he has, doctors are saying don't have surgery. What do you think that does to his value? And do you think he is high on the Browns' radar list?
Yeah, I do. I mean, he is definitely a candidate for that second overall pick. I mean, there's been some conversation that maybe Tennessee has some interest in him with the first overall pick, since they have granted Harold Landry, their Pro Bowl linebacker, they've granted him permission to seek a trade. So I don't know, does that mean that they're, does that telegraph that they're going to take Carter with the first overall pick? You know, I don't know, but I think that that's some well-founded speculation on a lot of folks' part. But I don't, I mean, just based on what I've read coming out of Indianapolis, it doesn't sound like the foot situation is going to do much in the way of damage to his draft stock, which typically, let's be honest about it, in years past, when something like that comes out concerning a player, it tends to crater their draft stock. So it doesn't sound like teams are going to shy away from him just because of this particular foot ailment that they discovered.
Daryl, give me a thought on this before I ask the question. Any current Browns quarterback back next year? You think DTR is back next year?
I don't think any of them are back next
year. Okay. With that thought in mind, do you think it's more likely that the Browns sign two free agent quarterbacks or draft two quarterbacks?
I would probably say draft two quarterbacks. Especially if they're going to take one at two, it wouldn't surprise me if they take another shot later in the draft at another guy. We've seen teams do this before, but you know, the old saying, the more swings you take, the better you increase your odds. So I could definitely see a scenario of them drafting two players, but I also see a scenario where you go out and you sign two guys. The thing of it is what's available this offseason, as we talked extensively about, the options are not that great. So, yeah, I would lean toward them probably with their 11 projected picks, two of those potentially being quarterbacks.
Is there a veteran out there that you think, you know what, I could go for that guy?
No.
Okay.
I don't like any of the quarterbacks that are available. That's why I've been mocking the
Cousins,
situation.
Not Jones.
Calling it dumpster diving for quarterbacks, because that's what the Browns are doing. I mean, I think Kirk Cousins is the best of the worst that's available. And he's got to become available first and foremost, right? I wouldn't trade for him. Certainly wouldn't trade for that contract. You know, the Matthew Stafford speculation's been out there, but okay, that's great. But then there's this little world called reality that we all need to live in, and I just don't see a way in which that ever happens, both from a financial standpoint, a cap standpoint, or a compensation standpoint, considering where the Browns are right now. They are not, and I cannot stress this enough, they are not just a quarterback away. They have a lot of holes on this roster they need to fill.
Two questions. One, I want your reaction to the NFLPA report cards that came out yesterday. To your disappointment about not being able to go back to the Greenbrier?
I think the happiest people about the not going back to the Greenbrier are the folks that plan the budgets in town for all the media outlets. but the not that we got to stay at the Greenbrier, but still, not a cheap trip. And the report card, look, I kind of feel like that there's a combination of factors in there. I think you got the whiny crybaby factor. I think you got the residue of going through a lousy season, 3-14 in there. I understand a couple of the criticisms in there, like the locker room. I mean, they did gut it and expand it a couple years ago, but it's still a tight locker room. But it's a nice locker room. It's not like the place is a dump. It's well kept. And again, it's not all that old. They've spent millions of dollars on player facilities. They got a golf simulator in that building, for crying out loud. Come on now. That the players get to use.
Yeah,
so,
but it wasn't the kind of golf simulator they wanted, Daryl.
Yeah, so Yeah, I mean, team travel, I don't know about that. I mean, I think pro athletes in general these days are pretty coddled, and they I don't know if this is because all the colleges now have all these massive fancy locker rooms and stuff like that, that the expectation is NFL teams are supposed to have that both at a stadium and at the training facility. But the grades that I pay attention to really are the support staff grades, the coaching staff grades, and the ownership grades, and obviously a pretty mixed bag there.
Daryl, let me ask you one thing. I know you, and I'll get back into that, what you just said about there, but I thought the team travel thing was interesting because Jeff and I were debating it. Was it Greenbrier one of the reasons that they got such a low grade there? And if you think about it, like, if anyone was ever going to complain about travel, it would be Seattle. And they got an A. They have to travel farther than any other team in the NFL because there just aren't that many teams that are close to them. And I find it really interesting that Seattle can pull an A in team travel and the Browns end up getting a D. And I got to believe that that's about Greenbrier.
Well, how about this? The Patriots also got a bad grade.
They got an F. Player.
Yeah, they got, and they have a custom plane. Now, I did find the ashtrays at the seats comment. I found that to be somewhat funny, but like, yeah, they have their own team plane, and the players are unhappy with that. You know what? Maybe they ought to go back to flying coach. How about that? How about they have to go through terminals just like everybody else does, go through TSA, do all that kind of stuff, meet you at gate B11.
They do go through TSA.
You understand what I'm saying. They take TSA to the team.
Yeah, TSA comes to them.
Yeah, what, like,
that's true.
How about they travel like normal people do? Then they can complain about their team travel.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Daryl Ryder.
Dropping a hammer
there. I agree with
him. Daryl, so talk about the reflection on those grades then for the ownership and the head coach.
Well, Kevin Stefanski's never really graded well. And I think part of it, let's be honest about it, when you're in the work environment, it's, you know, you understand the bosses get criticism, whether it's fair or not. But the usage of time, the lack of culture, the lack of accountability, those are all red flags to me. And oh, by the way, I've heard all that stuff before. So, like, I wasn't shocked by that at all. But that did not make a two-time NFL Coach of the Year look all that great. Let's just put it that way.
Something you're looking forward to watching at the Combine coming up, workout starting today?
The 40-yard dashes.
Okay.
I love the 40-yard dash is my favorite thing ever because everyone's locked in with their stopwatches and things like that. You know, I'm not all that upset that Shedeur Sanders won't be throwing or Cam Ward's not going to throw. If you want to see those guys throw, fire up the tape, you know. Pull up the college scouting film and look at that. I don't think that there's a lot to glean from those guys in those particular drills at the combine. The interview process, I think, is more important than that. Obviously, you know, for the receivers and the running backs that, you know, catching the ball out of the backfield drills, stuff like that. Yeah, you want some quarterbacks zipping the ball in there where it's supposed to be, so you kind of get a good look at them. But also, too, you want some poor throws in there to see how these guys are able to adjust, right? Because let's be honest about it. In games, there's, you know, the perfect throw isn't always there. It's about, can you go make the play? Can you beat your man to make the play? But there's no man to beat on the field at the combine, so. The underwear Olympics, as I like to call it, makes for riveting television for some.
Daryl, I got 30 seconds. I got to ask you this. Tell everybody how excited you are about the electronic system to measure first downs. I've never heard anybody. You're probably the only person I know more excited than me.
You're not really good at the sarcasm thing, Baskin. You're about as good as dripping
the
sarcasm as you are with.
Why do you hate it?
You are with your dad jokes.
Okay.
Because the chain is undefeated. That's why. It's exactly 10 yards. Boom,
argument.
Boom, there you go. You know what? Technology's faulty. That's why I'm not crazy about it. You know, everyone thinks that technology solves every single problem. I'm here to tell you, technology, it's not always it's not always dead on accurate.
All right, so. When you have nothing to say about it for the are you clapping for him?
He's on the money.
You are. This is insane. We need the
down marker.
You
measure it out. It's 10 yards.
When the ball crosses
you know
the
what
line,
I, you know what
it
I did
lights
to him,
up.
Jeff?
End of story.
I broke out my little. I broke out a card yesterday because remember that how the officials would pull the card out of their pocket. To
because everyone has an index card in their pocket.
The
yes,
sure. Yeah, they do to make sure the nose of the ball got to the chain.
Yeah. Sure,
ridiculous.
It's great theater for television.
Goodbye, Darryl Ryder. We're done. I'm done with you.
Thank you, D.
We'll argue somewhere else. Thank you.
See ya.
Goodbye. He's Darryl Ryder. He's our Browns beat reporter. You can hear him on It's Always Game Day in Cleveland. You know, I've been pretty adamant and excited about the thought of bringing in Abdul Carter, whether Myles Garrett is here or not. If you had a chance to watch him all season long, I'm sure Buckeye fans know him very well. After watching him play at Penn State, he can be an absolute devastating destroyer. In someone's offensive backfield.
A devastating destroyer.
He is a devastating destroyer.
Wow.
He will wreck you. He is not the same.
Abdul Double D Carter.
I'm just saying he is something special. I love watching this guy play. It was, you know you like a guy when you're watching him play against a team you're rooting for and you start to hate them and you're like, oh, I wish that guy was on our team. And I think Abdul Carter's one of those guys. And he is not only fun to watch, he is fast. He is strong. He's not Myles Garrett. He's not the same size as Myles Garrett. I don't know who is the same size as Myles Garrett, but he is someone that could be around this team for a really long time. And I've kind of been in on him since the end of the college football season. So Jeff, the news coming out of Indianapolis, Adam Schefter reporting this again today, that doctors have advised Abdul Carter against having foot surgery. Carter, a potential first-round pick in the NFL draft, has a stress reaction in his right foot and was facing the possibility of surgery after tests revealed the injury on Wednesday. What does this make you think of him?
Nothing. You know why?
Change anything?
No, it doesn't. Unless a doctor says this is going to be a chronic problem and, you're going to have to your foot's going to be a problem throughout your career, I wouldn't think it would affect anything. And I would think a team is more apt to make a mistake by overreacting and thinking, uh-oh, shoulder, foot, injury, bad, we're not taking him because of that. And then you pass on somebody who's going to be a big-time player for a long time. I would think that's the mistake you make. If you draft him, I would think you're less likely to make a mistake.
I mean, we know somebody else that has feet problem. He's Myles Garrett. And that kind of came out this year, too. Drew Rosenhaus, who's his agent, said that it should be exactly what Jeff said, a non-factor in Carter's draft stock. And Rosenhaus said, I couldn't be more confident that this will be a non-factor where he's drafted. He will put on a show at his pro day. I
that's wonderful.
The thing is, I don't need his pro day. I need to see what he did at Penn State, what he looked like against competition that's live in meaningful games, not against air, not against guys you're bringing in that you're hoping that might get a look from another scout that might draft one of your guys in the sixth or seventh round. That's not what – like, he proved himself on tape all season long. And so that's where I get my emphasis on him and why I think so highly of Abdul Carter and what kind of a football player he is. Again, Jeff, if you're a team – that is drafting after the Browns.
Yeah.
You're all about this news because now maybe you got these teams scared up top. I mean, Schefter called them a potential first overall pick. That's a possibility. I mean, you never know.
Well, sure. Why not?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if we're talking about him at two, why can't you talk about him at one?
Oh, they are. Who else would it be? Travis Hunter? Mason Graham? Shadur or Cam?
That's it.
It's
what it seems like
they're
now.
They're your guys. Yeah.
We sit here for months though and talk about this stuff, and then it always seems like on draft day, there's always one or two names that sneak up that no one has been talking about.
But they're not going to draft them at one.
No.
I mean, Tennessee's either going to draft one of those guys at one or they're going to trade out of the pick.
I'm just looking at CBS right now. Man, they dropped him down a little bit here. This can't be right. I don't know. I look at through some of this stuff, and you kind of have to wonder as we sit here and we juggle this. Part of it is, I think, for the Browns, they have to figure out Is Abdul Carter a guy they might want it to? Are they scared because of this recent news? And then are there so many edge rushers? Because I thought we heard Andrew Berry say this the other day, too, that, you know, this is a very heavy draft for edge rushers. And mm-hmm. we've been talking about that for a while. And if they think they could get another edge rusher at some other point, then why not do it?
Yeah, except for one thing. Do you want a good edge rusher, or do you want the best in the draft who could be a Pro Bowl guy for 8 years? I mean, just because there are plenty of them doesn't mean they're all the same caliber. And that's why you would take Abdul Carter, because most folks think he's the best guy. Does he end up being that way? Nah, maybe. Maybe not. You know, these are all just people evaluating, Andy. You have no idea how a guy is going to grow physically. And I mean that by, you know, through workouts and everything else. You have no idea what's between his ears. And you can do all the checking you want. You have no idea.
I wonder how this is going to play out for folks writing in the media. So, like, Josh Edwards from CBS Sports, right? So this was, like, just, you know, simple, easy search. Let's see how this is affecting him as far as headlines are going right now. And Josh Edwards from CBS said, forget about the foot injury. He's going number one.
Quite possible.
Yeah.
Of course, Josh isn't making the pick, is he?
No, he's not. And then he's got the Browns taking Cam Ward number two.
Fine. If the Browns think he's the man.
Hmm. I don't know. I wonder how locked in Browns fans are on a quarterback at two. And I wonder how locked in Browns fans are anti-quarterback at two. And if you're anti-quarterback, then you're Abdul Carter or you're Travis Hunter, right? I don't see. Do you
Mason
see
Graham, maybe. Defensive tackle for Michigan.
Yeah, Jalen Walker's moving up, too. I start seeing his name in more higher, a little bit higher. Probably sitting, like, again, CBS has him going pick number six to the Raiders. So, I just, if you're the Browns and you're trying to figure this thing out, do you weigh in this injury to make you scared of that? And then I'll even dip into a little bit more of what Kevin said yesterday when Kevin talked in the sidebar. He was very, very heavy on quarterbacks yesterday and saying that, like, hey, I don't know what you're reading about these quarterbacks or why people think this is such a bad quarterback draft. He's not in that school of thought. He believes that, you know, that this is a strong quarterback class. Now, if you're Kevin, are you saying that because you're trying to send smoke screens out, or do you truly believe that?
Or are you setting it up so that when you draft someone at 33 who plays quarterback, or move back up into the first round and draft somebody at quarterback, Jalen Milroe, Jackson Dart, that you can say, boy, we got our guy. That's the guy we liked most coming into this draft. Hmm. That's possible too, Andy.
Yeah, I wonder if they feel like, and doesn't it feel, and I'm going to ask Darrell Ryder about this too, about that there's a tier selection here then, right? That it's Sanders and Ward, and then there's this next group. And I'm wondering over the next, you know, 2-3 days here, how many of those guys at quarterback might be able to bump themselves up into that Sanders Ward tier. Is there another
Nobody.
Quarterback that you don't
Nobody.
Think so?
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm.
Chuck's not happening.
Chuck's in a car. Let's talk Abdul Carter. Hi, Chuck. How
Charles?
Are you?
I have to caution you, Andy, about your premature articulation.
I like
the
it.
Devastating.
Yes.
The devastating destroyer name. Do you not remember the mad dog in the meat market?
I do. Yes. Thank you. I got a little excited, Chuck. I'm sorry.
He's fired up, Chuck.
It's not that the problem is I don't feel, and for whatever, I'm just a regular guy like everybody else. I just don't feel that strong about taking a quarterback at two unless you really feel like they're going to be here for a while. And this is a franchise that hasn't been able to hang on to quarterbacks for 4 or 5 years. It just hasn't been since 99, even before that. I mean, if they could get a quarterback with a second pick in this draft and you feel like he's going to be a quality quarterback that can lead you to the playoffs, have success in the playoffs, then I'm all in on a quarterback at two. But that goes back to, and Jeff gets mad because I add emotion to it, because you got to love him. You got to love him at two, and I just feel like...
I hope he marries my daughter.
Would you stop it? I just think your odds are better on taking a lineman at two or somebody that can help you long-term more than a quarterback. Now, that could come back and burn me, and I could look like a total idiot and say, oh, my God, the Browns didn't take Cam Ward, and Cam Ward led some team, the Raiders, to 6 straight Super Bowls, and we let him go.
Hope he and my daughter and the grandkid Andrew.
We are great on living in the wheel of regret. Chuck,
Just be careful with the nicknames. That's all I got.
There it is, Chuck. Oh,
that's it. It's just
Abdul Double D Carter.
Devastating destroyer. It's more fun. Isn't it more fun to come up with nicknames?
216-474-0092.
Let's talk about Abdul Carter, edge rusher, Penn State, 6'3", 252. He is very good on the outside, and he has feet that lead him to the quarterback where he is able to tackle him in the backfield, where it is called a sack. Come on, man. Let's add some adjectives to this thing.
They live on a cul-de-sac? Is that what you just said?
Lives on a cul-de-sac? No, he has the ability to get back
Kayla
there.
Kayla shaking your head. You said call a sack or something like that. Sounded like cul-de-sac.
The ability to have a quarterback be tackled for loss behind the line of scrimmage, therefore being known as a sack.
There it is.
That's really exciting stuff, right?
How
about someone who can destroy a quarterback? That's a little bit more fun. It's a little bit more about what the game's all about. So I've been in and out of Abdul Carter. I'm just a little bummed out about this and where we are and that comes out.
Does he not seem like the safe, smart choice in this draft?
Yes, which makes me think the Browns aren't going to do it.
The Browns might not get the chance to do it. I mean, he might go number one to Tennessee.
If you were Tennessee, would you trade him?
Nope.
Trade the pick, not him.
Here's the problem. Tennessee has the first pick. What does Tennessee need? A quarterback. Browns have the second pick. What do the Browns need? A quarterback. Giants have the third pick. What do the Giants need? A quarterback. Raiders have the sixth pick. What do the Raiders need? A quarterback. Who is Tom Brady supposedly met with?
A quarterback.
Matthew Stafford.
In Montana.
There you go.
Is that tampering?
Wonder if he's in your old apartment.
Probably he's hanging out in Missoula.
I bet he is.
Somewhere in Missoula, they just stumbled out of Rays or Mo Club, and now they just figured out, hey, you know, why don't you come play for me? Hey, are we really allowed to talk about this? Don't you own part of the Raiders?
Yeah, the problem here is this. If Tennessee takes Abdul Carter, what does that say about their thoughts on the quarterbacks? It means the team with the number one pick thought, we're good. Let's go get a guy to get it to a quarterback. Does that make you think, uh-oh, Cam Ward, is he any good? Shedeur Sanders, is he any good? I could see where it might make you think that.
Well, keep going on the quarterbacks because, like I said, Kevin Stefanski was talking about this quarterback class yesterday. We'll talk about what he had to say, and I'm wondering if you feel the same way. Do you think that this quarterback class that's coming out this year is better than what's being said in the media? Because they've been put down since the beginning of the college football season. Oh, this isn't a very good class. Oh, this isn't a very... Is it? You tell me. You've had a chance to see some of these guys play. Are one of them worthy of wearing a Browns jersey? Find out soon. 216-474-0092. Andrew Siciliano joins us at 11:20.
The big news of the day, as the scouting combine rolls along, and you guys can get your own mock drafts in for Mock Me coming up at 6 o'clock, where we're going to have Jake Murren read off all the mock drafts, the pros, right? Field Yates, he's got a new mock out. We're going to read it. We're going to judge it. Probably going to destroy it. But if you send yours in to at Nick Wilson Says at afternoon 923FAN, we will grade it accordingly and treat you with a lot more respect than we do the national folks. But again, Mock Me coming up at 6. But as the combine's rolling on, we thought we were going to talk a lot about Abdul Carter today. And instead, we've been talking more about Myles Garrett doubling down that no, a fat stack of bills is not going to get the job done to keep Myles in Cleveland.
Which I think is the respectable move by Myles.
Yes.
I do. I like this. But I also, man... Like, do the Browns think
who's
he wasn't going to...
Wait, who's bluffing more? The Browns or Myles Garrett?
Browns, totally.
Okay, I agree.
Yeah, but like...
It better be.
Did the Browns think that they could just keep talking and speaking this way and Myles would just stay quiet? Like,
yes.
Have you met Myles Garrett? You know what I mean? Like, how did they expect this to go down any other way?
It's either that or they're just trying... It's a game of chicken
Maybe they don't care.
All right, so I hope that they're just trying to do this because they're preserving the trade value of Myles and the idea that you don't want to trade him in the hopes of getting maximum deal for Myles. I hope that's the case.
Yeah.
My concern is that they're baiting Miles into a game of chicken so that Miles looks as bad as they do on the way out, so they don't get as much blowback when they trade him.
But Miles has to remain consistent with the messaging that he did today. I thought it was really smart of Miles to approach it this way, because there are people out there like myself that are like, all right, I get you want to play for a Super Bowl, but how much of this is really about the money? And when you make it be known, it is not about a contract. It is not about the financials. I just want to go to a place where I can win. Everyone gets that messaging. And I thought he veered away from that a little bit, and now he's coming back home to it, and I think that's the right call if you're Miles.
So with that being said, Mike Florio, he had something to say on Miles Garrett's trade request and got into who he thinks will make that decision inevitably.
He's made it clear he wants out. Look, I'm a firm believer that everything that happens with the Browns comes from the top of the organization and Jimmy Haslam, including Deshaun Watson is not being benched. So it's the other guys who have to go out there and sell to the world, just Deshaun Watson isn't being benched. I think Jimmy Haslam is saying we're not trading this guy. No matter how bad he wants out, tough, and go out there and tell the world we're not going to trade him.
All right, so I'm torn on this because I think there's some validity to the idea that a decision like trading Miles probably needs to be pushed by Jimmy Haslam if Andrew Berry is in job preservation mode. At the same point, this does go into the narrative of we can never hold Andrew Berry or Kevin Stefanski accountable because that big bad Jimmy Haslam, which I think is a Florio and media creation.
Which is why they continue to get the pass anytime anyone from a national perspective talks about him. But I am curious, though. Like, who do you think it's the final call in this scenario? Is it Haslam, or does Andrew Berry actually have the power to be able to trade Miles Garrett if he wants to?
I mean, I think this is... So listen, this is tough because I don't know in their heart of hearts what Berry really wants and what Stefanski really wants and what Haslam wants.
Is it safe to assume that between the three of them, and we'll throw Deep Podesta in the mix, there's just no chance all four of them are aligned 100% properly?
Yeah, I think the alignment thing, and I don't mean for them, I mean this idea that everybody in the organization, all the power brokers, are ever 100% aligned is one of the biggest myths we've ever created in sports.
Wouldn't it be a bad room if that was the case? Like, I don't want to be in a room where if I had four people, it's just four bobbleheads, and they all agree with everything I say and think exactly the same way as me. It'd be a pretty boring room.
I mean, I've seen it screwed up every which way, and I don't mean here in Cleveland. I mean, with all the teams I've covered, I've seen true alignment, and it's not worked out. I've seen true alignment, and it has. And then I've seen everything in between. I think what... So this is a case of somebody needs to be looking out for the Browns' best interest and having a disgruntled face of the franchise who, in fairness, you haven't won a lot with the last couple years, and maybe his last year or two at this value. Like, if he's 2 years younger, this just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But he's 29 going on 30, and his value as the best defensive player in the NFL is still incredibly high.
Yeah.
So he wants it. You probably need to retool this roster, even if you don't want to use the word rebuild, because it might not sell tickets. So if Andrew Berry's doing things and you're seeing this and you're like, wow, okay, externally he's saying, well, we're not trading him. And then internally, it sure seems like he's making decisions out of self-interest. Then that's the point to me where Jimmy has to come down off Mount Pius and be like, hey, you know, I love you. You know, I trust you. Get a damn deal done, because this isn't good for anyone. Miles, our future with him after he retires, it's not good for our team. It's not good for our locker room.
Right, right.
We don't want to bring the... If we already have cultural issues and a head coach who can't be a leader of men and a locker room saying that in the NFLPA survey, let's go ahead and take one disgruntled soldier out and get a butt ton of assets in that time. So it's Andrew Berry's job until he does anything other than what's best for the Cleveland Browns.
But this is why I find this so interesting, is because for how many months now I've acted through the lens of Andrew Berry. It's like, Andrew Berry wouldn't do this because Andrew Berry needs to keep his job. Andrew Berry has to have the Browns competitive next year, or Andrew Berry doesn't keep his job. It's kind of like the Matthew Stafford convo when we talked about it with Joe Shane and Brian Daboll. It's like, well, they got to make a trade for Stafford. If not, like, we'll call Matthew Stafford the savior to their jobs. Well, who actually gets the call there? You know, like, if are we looking at this through the wrong lens? When Stefanski and Berry go up to the podium, are they just doing the bidding of Jimmy Haslam in this discussion? So, do they think differently? Would they make a different move, or is this like, it's so fascinating to me for so many different reasons?
I just there's just a part of me that can't lean into this is all Jimmy. You know, like Jimmy's the one holding this up.
At one point, we thought that he'd kind of been able to take a back seat, right? And we thought that maybe he was getting interested more in the Bucks and the crew, and he was just not as, and the stadium and everything like that, and in the day-to-day operations, he was trying to take a little bit more of a back seat, but I don't know where he's at right now.
Well, I mean, I in fairness, when we say Jimmy, we probably should say Jimmy D, JW, their daughters. Like, we probably should throw everybody into this, because it does seem like it's more of a quorum instead of solely Jimmy or definitely Jimmy and D, which is maybe what has felt like previously.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, what, 3-4 years ago, they started putting D front and center and saying, like, D Haslam does a lot more now. Like, they've done this.
But, like, I continue to come back to the idea of the only reason Jimmy should step in on any of this is if he sees this going in a way that it doesn't have to go. Like, the owner really should just be a break glass in case of emergency. If the adults aren't being, if the adults in the room aren't being adults in the room.
Should be, but is he?
Well, what do you mean?
Like, that should be the case. Yes, if we had a normal ownership, that would be the case. Is he that way, though? We don't know. I mean, we famously have the story about Johnny Manziel and the homeless man and the conversation that took place. We don't know what his involvement is, if he actually is just a break glass in case of emergency.
And we don't know what he used to be and what he is now. I would just imagine, like, I don't know.
Florio thinks he knows.
Yeah, well, Florio thinks he knows a lot of things. Florio's
pretty adamant there.
And I'm not trying to cast aspersions on Mike, but I just, that's become such a matter of fact that people have espoused it as if it's written to the Constitution that Jimmy Haslam's the only reason the decisions get made in Berea. And I just think that's wildly offensive. Like, and the reason being is I don't hear anyone giving Jimmy Haslam credit, and I can't believe I'm actually defending this, but I don't hear anyone giving Jimmy Haslam credit when the Browns actually succeed. So it's only convenient to throw out the, well, I think Haslam is the stick in the mud when you're losing or when you're having some sort of difficulty.
I made the case when they made the trade for Deshaun Watson that if it goes well, then it's going to be all the credit for Andrew Berry, and if it doesn't, like it hasn't, Jimmy Haslam would take the brunt of it.
But I continue to come back. Well, but that, I think that's a great case. Like, let's not get lost in the details here. The only way I want Jimmy making this decision is if Andrew Berry's afraid of his own shadow, or if Andrew Berry's doing things that are counter to what's best for the Cleveland Browns. And I hate to have to be saying this. It's in the Browns' best interest to trade Myles Garrett. And it's going to cheese me off watching that guy hoist a Lombardi. It's going to upset me to watch that guy be really good for potentially 5 to 7 years, maybe 10 years after leaving here. But he doesn't believe in what you do anymore. And it's not simply about Stefanski and Barry. It's from the top to the bottom.
But maybe that's why there's such a stick in the mud in this conversation, though. Like, maybe that's what it is. Maybe the directive has already come from Haslam and said, what's in the best interest for the Browns is to trade Myles Garrett. So you're going to go up to the podium and you're going to say exactly what I want you to say, because this is what's happening here. We have control over him for multiple years. We have not only that, we can in theory control him for 5 years if we want to. The ball's in our court. And so maybe that's where we're at.
So I think that's a good point. Again, we're in the space where what you say publicly, everything could and probably is a smokescreen. What I will say is, if Jimmy has to be the guy in February, and I'm not sure he is, because again, this is a very pro Barry and Stefanski narrative that they're just along for the ride and everybody's at the whim of the Haslams. Okay, that's a bit of a cop-out for two grown men who have not succeeded enough on their own merits. I digress. But if, to me, this is the ultimate sign. This is the ultimate sign that if for whatever reason, Jimmy Haslam has to be the one to be the bad guy to say, you have to trade Myles Garrett, you need to fire Andrew Berry. Probably this summer.
Might be what he likes about Andrew Berry and Stefanski, though, is that they will do his bidding and they will be his puppet in many ways. And they will take the media fire and sit up there on a Tuesday and Wednesday and be emphatic.
I mean, I'm sure that, I mean, again, that flies. If Jimmy Haslam is just the guy that gets his way and he's running and making more decisions than we think, that plays into that. I tend to think that Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski, if they really had problems with how things were done in Cleveland, wouldn't have signed those contract extensions a year ago. I think if they had a problem they wouldn't have taken the jobs in the first place because Andrew Berry took the job knowing the situation in Cleveland 5 years ago. Stefanski, at least you can give the cop out of, he had never been in the organization. He'd only heard, you know, tales in the NFL streets. Berry, there's no, like,
yeah, Berry might have just wanted the job too, though. He was the youngest GM in league history.
He was a contender for a lot of jobs. He didn't have to take the Kevin had to take the Kevin was not really a serious candidate for anybody else. Andrew had been interviewed and was serious candidates across the NFL and was in the perfect spot to launch out of Philadelphia, given where they were. He would have been a GM somewhere else. I don't know if we can say the same about Kevin, who I think is a little shermery, but I don't know. But this all comes back to, I just don't love the idea of, well, if he gets traded or if he doesn't get traded, you just got to put it on Haslam.
I want to extend this out a little bit, though. I want to know how far it does go. I mean, listen, we're not taking Mike Florio's word as gospel here, but if you treat it through the Haslam lens, is he the one making the call on the number two overall pick?
No, I don't think he should be.
I don't think he should be either. I don't think he should be the one making the call on Myles Garrett either, by the way. But like, where does it start? Where does it stop?
I mean, in a perfect world, in an imperfect world where Jimmy has more say on things, he's presented three options for the offseason, and then he kind of ranks them and kind of gives the okay on which one he prefers, right? So like, if you say, whose final say is it on trading Miles, that's different to me than being the person in sole control of the decision. Andrew should be in sole control of the decision. And the same thing about, okay, is it a rebuild or is it a retool, or are we going to win next year? Are we going to go for it next year? That should be an Andrew Berry decision. Now, Jimmy has the final say, which means he's got veto power. It's not the same thing as he's the guy dictating any of this. That's not where I want him at, and that's also not how I think this is set up. Even if it might be advantageous to Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski to think it. But 216-474-0092, who gets the actual say on trading or keeping Myles Garrett? Clark, Jim, Lewis, you guys in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. Remember earlier this week, I believe 2 days ago, Andrew Berry sure made it seem like the Browns were just going to throw a lot of money at him. And you know, something I think that was missed in the conversation we were having in the previous segment, which is basically who gets the say on trading or keeping Myles Garrett. And mm-hmm. It should be Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski, and the right of rejection or right of refusal goes to Jimmy Haslam. That's what it should be. But if Jimmy Haslam does have to be the one making this decision, or if he's just making it because he wants to make this decision and he's the one stepping up on it, to me it says that in 5 years, the relationship between Berry, Stefanski, DePodesta, and Jimmy Haslam have not grown or evolved in any meaningful way, and that this is still some sort of problematic entanglement that's never going to lead to conducive winning in a conducive atmosphere.
Instead of growing, though, maybe it did at one point grow and now it's shrunk down.
For which part?
No, like from Haslam to everyone else. Like maybe there was a spot where, Andrew Berry got to do more things and there was more trust that was built up and he really started to believe in whatever vision that Andrew Berry put forth. And maybe now after everything that's gone down, maybe there's still belief there that he can figure it out, but maybe, just maybe, it has shrunk down. And maybe this is where Haslam starts to take more control over what he's already, or what he used to do, which is make a lot of the decisions around Berea.
Which Anthony Schwartz drop do you think it was?
I don't know. You tell me. You tell me your favorite.
Probably the second to last one.
You tell me your favorite. Yeah.
Not the real problematic one, but that second to last one really started to cheese people off. So who gets the say on trading or keeping Myles Garrett? 216-474-0092. Jim in Strongsville, welcome to the show, buddy. What you got for us?
Hey, guys. Nick, I'm glad you added that speculation as, like, the backdrop is the owner. Because, look, any team in the league, no matter who they are, anytime it requires a decision be made about one of your top players, one of your biggest names, or whether it comes down to do we rebuild or do we whatever, I'm sorry, at the end of the day, all of that has to get run by the owner. There's very few people in this league. You're talking maybe your Pat Riley's, but even he, I think, would have to run something by the owner. I just think you earn that certain level of trust, is what you had said. And, like, this idea of blaming Jimmy Haslam for everything, look, I get it. Florio's a Jimmy Haslam hater. That dude just hates Jimmy Haslam. I don't know if it's his politics. I don't know what it is. That guy can't get out of his mouth fast enough the bad thing to say about Jimmy. So what I would say, though, is this. Jimmy has been fine, but you know what? Jimmy's not responsible for Andrew Berry drafting like garbage. I mean, does that fall? Is that Jimmy Haslam's fault? I don't think so. Like, I think a lot of what could be forgotten if, honestly, if Andrew Berry was just better at his job. Yes, the Deshaun Watson trade was horrible. We don't know exactly who was responsible and where to assign blame to who and what percentage of blame. But at the end of the day, Andrew Berry has not done good enough. He just hasn't drafted well. And I would say this, when you guys have Darryl on next, and I don't think this is an out-of-bounds question to ask Andrew Berry. I really don't, because you are out there asking questions that people want to know the answer to. I don't think it would be wrong or be unprofessional for reporters at this point to ask Andrew Berry, Andrew, with your history of the draft not being necessarily as successful as one would hope, why should fans have confidence that you're the guy to turn this ship around and to start making decisions that are going to be in the Browns' best interest and get them to a Super Bowl? It's been 5 years. My question would be, like, what can you say to fans to give them confidence that, yes, things have changed for you and you're the guy to make this happen?
Jim, we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you so much. You know what's... So to kind of build on what he was saying about Berry, you know, like, I'm not saying he's saying this, but Danny this morning was talking about the NFLPA survey and was talking about, and I think he's right, that Stefanski's handling of the Deshaun Watson situation is a part of that C grade, and maybe a significant part of that C grade when we talk about accountability and a lack of all that kind of stuff. And I'm okay with pointing that out, as long as we don't then use it as an excuse of, well, of course, it was all Jimmy's fault that Deshaun was there in the first place. And even the idea of the only reason Deshaun played was Jimmy Haslam. Like, those things just continue to come back to. Now, I think we have enough evidence that 5 years in, Stefanski has had some success, more success than any other coach since 99. He hasn't had enough success, and there are real warning signs coming off a 3-14 season that go beyond just, like, Kevin could have handled the Deshaun situation better.
Yeah.
Even if that was foisted upon him.
Right. No, again, no one's perfect in any part of the scenario.
And same thing about Andrew Berry. And so I think when it comes back to it, like, Jimmy just shouldn't have to make this decision. They should go to him and say, hey, here are the four offers. Miles doesn't want to be here. I know we don't have to trade him. Let's just kind of all look at each other and say, he is 29 years old. He doesn't have a good attitude about where things are going, and we can get a haul for him. Let's do the right thing. And then now if it comes out that, well, Jimmy didn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I don't even know if you can trust that's the real thing.
The because report,
it just,
you mean?
Yeah, the report, because it's just preset.
By Barry, by Stefanski, and by everyone. I get it. And you're very into that thinking. And we have a lot of evidence to suggest why you'd be into that thinking. It's a fun question because we're never going to have a true answer to it. That's what I love about this stuff. We're never going to have a true answer as to is Haslam pulling more strings? Is Berry and Stefanski, are they more puppet? Are they actually being able to make some of the maneuvers and some of the big time deals? We're not going to have those answers.
And here's the thing. Like, the thing that always kills me is teams always, you know, winning is more than just the win and loss column in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
They're obsessed with winning the headline or, you know, winning the PR battle or, you know, there's so many teams. And it's so funny because I think fans and I think the average person puts so much stock into these are really smart people and they know what they're doing. And this is a general comment I'm going to make, not just to the Browns.
Yeah.
And yes, in an individual sentence,
which is funny because I think we think the exact opposite on an overall basis, not with the Browns, but I think we are constantly amazed at, like, wait, that person ended up, that's a head coach of a football team. That guy can't tie his shoes together.
Well, and like there's a lot of
trust him to run a 7-Eleven. That was a whole franchise.
There's tons of politics in football, and so even when owners think all they want to do is win, there's a myriad of decisions that have nothing to do with actually winning on the field that end up taking precedence over actually winning on the field.
Right, like when Freddie Kitchens got hired.
The number one thing that the Browns should be really stuck on here is, how do we win this trade meaning in the long run, it results in wins on the field. And I think right now it feels like, and I'm going to say that because I don't know, it feels like there's a bit of a PR battle going on here. It feels like there's a power dynamic between Miles and maybe in the Browns organization, which I think we're pointing out here. There's so many things that have nothing to do with winning on the field.
Yeah.
And it's just a nice reminder that you can win the Myles Garrett trade just by
What's the win look like to you?
The win looks like Andrew Berry makes the decision. He makes the right decision. He trades with the right team, if that is the right. And by the way, if you keep Myles, putting together the plan that actually keeps him here and happy, not just for a year, but for the rest of his damn career. So the two extreme avenues are you get the perfect quarterback, have the great offseason that you haven't had in a long time. I'm not talking about trades or free agency. I'm talking about drafting. And you build a sustainable winner. And you keep Miles with the right combination of money and look at the moves we've made, Miles, that maybe he didn't see coming. The other one is you're clear, you're decisive, you don't let this thing drag out in the streets the way it's starting to right now. You get a haul for Miles, and then you nail the draft, and you position yourself for the first step in that, I don't want to say longer term, but in that building plan that puts you into the perfect succession to build over multiple years into a consistent contender. Not consistent 11 wins one year, 8 win the next. I'm talking about consistent in the playoffs or on the periphery, 9-8 or better every sure. single year.
Yeah, and listen, you laid out how two different plans, and they can go either direction. So you're not hell bent on one side or the other. Then
no. I think trading Miles is in. You need a cultural reset. Miles is part of the culture. All right, I'm going to say if Miles has harbored doubts about the direction of the Browns organization, I'm going to say that came up in that locker room. I don't think that's helping the self-appointed whiz kid head coach who can't say a damn thing into a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're choosing Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, that's fine. But then give Kevin a chance by resetting that culture in that locker room and maybe restacking the balance of veterans and maybe getting the right voices in there. The Browns have said it. I mean, Jim Schwartz and Stefanski have said multiple times, we need our best players to lead. That is an inference that they don't think, whether it's Miles or Denzel or their other players,
right,
are necessarily doing that. So you can reset the culture. And for a roster with a lot of holes, you can start plugging them with a plethora of picks or players for Miles. So I tend to think that's the best way forward because it fixes Miles' problem and your problems. But the other way is...
Well, it's also easier said than done, too. Like, there was a lot attached to that.
Which part do you think is easiest
said? You said get the perfect quarterback, like, filling all the holes. Like, there's a lot that was easier said than done there.
That's the keep Miles path. I think that's the tougher path. I think it's so unlikely to do everything in that path that the easier path is give the player what he wants while maximizing the return and understanding that a cultural reset is probably maybe even more important than just a talent reset.
At least you're giving it options. I think we strayed pretty far away from the idea of does Haslam get to actually make the call though or not. And so because you're giving me multiple options, that means you could believe Haslam, if he is able to make the call, would be able to make the right call as well.
Well, but it is, but that's the point. To me, winning the Myles Garrett situation is the adults in the room being adults in the room and not needing Jimmy Haslam to make the damn decision.
Yeah, but if Jimmy Haslam doesn't believe them, then it obviously makes it very complicated.
Well, then he should have already fired them.
We agree with that.
I think that's where...
Maybe he looks at it like he already paid him, and that just is what it is, and he's just going to ride that out. I don't know.
I'd be surprised if, given Jimmy's previous history, he has some sort of objection to paying people he's fired.
I'm trying to figure it out. I'm trying to figure out why Florio believes Haslam makes as many calls and decisions as he does.
That's where Jim's right. It's because Florio is actually a Haslam hater.
Well, okay. I mean, but we have seen in the past history where Haslam has taken over. How much faith does he have in Andrew Berry? How many people listening out there right now have faith that Andrew Berry could execute either one of the plans that you laid out?
Well, but I'm one of them that wouldn't have that faith. But it doesn't matter because he's the GM. So the best case scenario is he does act in the best interest of the Browns.
But
right?
This is where Haslam would think, hey, I got to take over here.
Only if Andrew isn't making the right decision. Only if Andrew is playing hardball in public and then being in denial in private about either way, right?
You got me confused because you said if he's not making the right decision. We don't know what Haslam's right decision is.
Well, and that's a fair point, by the way, that I've been surmising the best decision is what's interested in the best interest of winning for the Browns now and long term. Haslam might just think trading Myles Garrett is disastrous for a stadium project in Brook Park, at which point we're really screwed because we're no longer operating in the bounds of how do we win. We're concerned about Barry and Stefanski's future, and we're concerned about a project in Brook Park, which should go ahead regardless because it's the right decision. Covered a lot there.
There was a lot there.
216-474-0092. Who gets the say on trading or keeping Myles Garrett? And when faced with a blatant lie, what can you really do? That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.